Blog Talk Radio.
And Don Show. My name is Don Allen. Over in Studio B is Mr. Ronald A. Edwards. Good evening, Mr. Edwards. How are you?
Fine this evening. Mr. Allen, weather's kind of improving here. In fact, I think it's been the warmest it's been all day. I think temperature's up to about 60 again. But what more can we say? A lot of things going on across the country, across the world.
Yes.
And, of course, here in our own beloved city, number of things happening that probably want to touch on. Major news story breaking here, of course, along with the legislative situation. We don't have any bills passed. The governor has vetoed everything. Now, because they're remodeling the state capitol, the governor's got to decide where they're going to have a special session and when. I've suggested on my television program that they have it at the Minneapolis Convention Center or downtown St. Paul, petition off the biggest hall they have down there, put the Senate on one side and the House of Representatives on the other. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. Get creative with it. Yeah.
That's right. Hey, man. You know, I mean, that's the way it used to be in the old days, in the days of the prairie wagon and the prairie dogs and the mules and et cetera. So that's certainly a big issue here. We have a interesting situation that's developed, Mr. Allen. I understand you posted it, and that is that we have an African-American police officer here, a young officer by the name of Michael Griffin, charged, indicted, 9 counts of violating federal law, including a violation of the civil rights of at least 4 citizens, filing of false reports, but probably most serious is going to be 2 counts of perjury. And so that puts you in a bad shape. Only thing is that this is the second police officer to be indicted by a grand jury out of Minneapolis in 30 years, and the last two have been African Americans. You know, with all the problems we've had here with police community relations, you would have thought that whoever the U.S. attorney was in office would have looked at some other situation. Terrence Franklin comes to mind as one that certainly should have been looked at. Some other cases involving the Metro Strike Force, the VOTEC unit, Violent Offenders Task Force, and et cetera, the conspiracy against black officers in which the city of Minneapolis awarded 5 black officers a couple of years ago $750,000 to keep everything quiet. So, but anyways, this young officer, 8-year veteran of the department, but I think he's all through, Don. I think they're going to fire in a couple of days, and you got 9 counts against you. They're basically going to get you on 1 or 2 of those counts, so that's going to cost him his career. But our listening audience needs to know that we really do not have bad black thumpers up here, if you will. You would think so with the indictments that are handed down on blacks. But not on their white counterparts. So I don't know what to say, Mr. Alvin, but, hey, phone lines are open, if you will. Hey, as we get ready to open them, another kind of tidbit. Talked to some sources in the unions and the Department of Labor. Man, do you know that the St. Paul and Minneapolis NAACPs were meeting with the commissioner of the MnDOT, Minnesota Department of Transportation, talking about that they will be the shepherds of any future construction programs here in the state of Minnesota. Mel Reeves, representing the Minneapolis NAACP. Our Jeffrey Martin, who is also an assistant city attorney for the city of St. Paul, and Diane Benz, representing the St. Paul NAACP. Now, this is the same NAACP St. Paul that couldn't get any black folks on the light rail in St. Paul, right? Am I correct?
Yeah, you are correct. You are correct. And that really shocked me, because none of these people are in construction. That's the first thing. And
you're absolutely correct.
And secondly, you know, again, we have the same dog and pony show being played that's been played every year for the last 20, 25 years in the Twin Cities, especially MnDOT, because what MnDOT will do now is the same practice they had with the Minneapolis Urban League, Mr. Edwards, is, okay, you guys are complaining a little bit too much. Here goes $150,000 for your highway, excuse me, highway heavy work ready program.
Okay, training program, got you,
yeah.
Okay.
But
now, here's something that happened, Mr. Allen, in the meeting yesterday with the commissioner himself of the Department of the Transportation. A union representative, not from the AGC, the Association of General Contractors, but one of the mechanical unions, actually told Louis King, the powerful political boss and of OIC, that Negroes really are too dumb to be able to work. They really can't read or write. I mean, really, man, it was actually said in the meeting. I understand it was really kind of ugly. I understand the Reverend Jerry McAfee, who was there, took exception to it. I'm not sure neither the Minneapolis or St. Paul NAACP took exception to that discussion. In fact, it's the talk around the state government, and particularly the Department of Transportation, that a union head could get away, you know, really with that kind of statement. Again, these phone lines are open, you know what I mean? 347-426-3904. 347-426-3904. This is the Don and Ron program coming to you out of the Twin Cities of Minneapolis and St. Paul. So, we got the same dog and pony show, Mr. Allen. It just never changes. This is kind of a program of kind of telling it. The Minneapolis Civil Rights Department failed to meet its deadline on getting its fourth quarter report, which, you know, was the end of 2014. You know, like it's now May, right? They had promised the chairman of the powerful Public Safety Committee, Blogang, that they would be on time. This time, they were a couple, oh, I think they were 2 months late, 3 months late with the third quarter report. And so Chairman Yang was waiting. They were supposed to be on the agenda today. Didn't make it. So it's been knocked back to the 10th of June, if I'm not mistaken, if that's a Wednesday. Velma Corbell and her crew doing a lot of traveling, playing, and, you know, taking care of their personal business, but not taking care of the business of the application of the law.
Yeah.
Wow. Yeah. I don't know what to say, Don. But again, those final phone lines are open. This is the Don and Ron program. What else we got, my brother?
Well, I'm just, you know, something you said earlier, Mr. Eric, that, and I was looking through the file here, and you were talking about the police officer, Mr. Griffin, being indicted on 9 counts, and I was just going through the history to try to see, you know, where, you know, some white officers and have been indicted. And as you said, they have not. And that's kind of troubling. So I'm trying to figure out, will the Minneapolis NAACP, St. Paul, or any of the flagship African-American organizations come next to this brother, you know, and show solidarity? And
I would think that in normal situations that would happen, but because the NAACP, which now is very much tied in with the Black Liberation Front and Black Lives Matter, will probably show their disdain and hatred for law enforcement, including black law enforcement officers, and probably will not speak up. It will also be interesting on that particular point, Mr. Allen, if, in fact, the newly elected head of the Police Federation, Lieutenant Robert Crow, will speak up for Officer Griffin, as he has done for the last couple of officers, and particularly for those officers, remember, that were involved in that Green Bay incident, in which they were fired, Chief Janae Harto. A lot of criticism of her, much of it, I think, unfair. Remember, she fired them, fired the two guys up there. They were in Green Bay. I think they were in Green Bay just to fight, you know, because they actually jumped on some black federal agents that were also in town. That was one of the reasons that the situation got hot. But anyways, President Crow, newly elected, takes office. Well, he's actually taking office now. We would certainly expect to hear from him, defending Officer Griffin, 8-year veteran of the department, standing up for him as he has stood up for the officers in the at that time as a member of the Executive Committee of the Federation, stood up for the officers involved in the death of Terrence Franklin, and other situations. So I assume that that Officer Griffin will be enjoying the full support of the Federation under Robert Crow. By the way, looked at some pictures last night, television programs, some pictures of members of the Minneapolis Police Department and their fraternization with some of the most powerful gangs in the United States, thugs, you know what I mean? I guess we're not supposed to talk about that after what happened in Waco. And by the way, let's open the phone lines for that one, too. Wasn't that some kind of shootout? Boy, it made you understand that white lives matter, too, right?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah, those are bikers. It was. That was. They didn't call them thugs or criminals or looters or rioters. You know,
they never referred to their race. I mean, I remember they had a shooting here in New Orleans a couple of years ago. Four people were killed in a series of drive-bys. And, boy, every other word by all the announcers, be it Fox or CNN or MSNBC or et cetera, was black, black, black gunman, black this, black that, black. I have not heard one reference to the race. Of course, all the bikers, all the 170 are in jail. Oh, I take that back. Three of them actually were allegedly accidentally released. Two of them have resurrendered, if you will. But I think there's one that is still on the loose. By the way, you would ultimately be surprised of the 170 that are in jail down there in good old Waco. You'd be surprised at how many of them are like former police officers.
Oh, wow.
Yes, sir. But anyways, some rumor has it that our motorcycle club here in the Minneapolis Police Department, they got an unusual name called City Heat. Yeah, City Heat. And,
interesting.
Yeah, in fact, looking at some pictures, showed some pictures last night for airing on Sunday on our television program. Shoot, them and some boys out of Chicago that were involved with the and for all them folks out there from Chicago that listen, y'all know what we're talking about, the Midnight Group, the Midnight Riders. That was the group that cost the city of Chicago and the taxpayers $62 million a couple weeks ago. Remember that?
Yes, I do.
Beat off all those black victims who were beaten and tortured and those that were killed. $62 million, man. And anyways, in some couple of pictures, we had some of the old Chicago boys that were a part of them Midnight Stompers there in Chicago back in the late 1970s and 80s. I mean, they used to wail on black people down there, man.
Mm.
You know what I mean? Wow. They'd break them up. Yeah. Yeah. In fact, a lot of folks got out of Chicago because of the Midnight Riders. Yes, sir. Yeah. So anyways, like I said, again, phone lines open, things going on here in the Twin Cities. African-American police officer indicted, 9 counts of violation. Isn't that amazing? Violation of the civil rights of individuals. Yeah.
And that happens any Saturday night in downtown Minneapolis, Mr. Edwards. You can see violations of civil rights for a whole bunch of folks. Walk around about bar closing time, walk around, and you'll see, you know, people getting pushed, shoved in the walls. It doesn't matter, male, female, black, white.
You're absolutely correct. By the way, update on homicides. You know, we had two homicides that were officially known on Friday and Saturday. We also had a brother who was still in critical condition leaving one of the barbershops on West Broadway. Homie just walked up to him, shot him point blank in the chest, and then took his necklace off. You know, he's wearing one, you know, the necklaces that the brothers of that millennium wear. Just took it off of him, man, left him laying there on the ground, you know. And then, of course, we, like I said, we had two homicides. In fact, one of the homicides, the gentleman that was stabbed to death, his uncle was one of the most respected police officers, black police officers, in the Minneapolis Police Department, Officer Manning. And let me just say this because I knew him well, originally born, raised in Seattle, Washington. Our condolences to his many relatives, loved ones, and et cetera, on the death of, quote-unquote, his nephew. So the violence kind of continues. Don, also, you know, and hey, maybe we get a call from some of the folks that live up there in what we call the 30s. Those are the 3,000 to 3,900. Man, Don, I'm telling you, they're sticking them up there. Now they're sticking them up in broad daylight.
Yeah.
Just walking up to you now, putting a pistol to your head, taking your money. And that whole area from the freeway, which is North 4th Street, all the way to the other side of Penn, and from, you know, technically Laurie, all the way up to 40th, 41st, just a rampant activity of criminal activity and crime and et cetera. It's really scary, man. Really scary.
Yeah, and that leads me to this thing, Mr. Edwards. I got up this yesterday morning and looked at this headline in the Star Tribune talking about the Twin Cities mayor's launch plan for minority boys and young men. And it really disturbed me that the city of Minneapolis is trying to be the mama and daddy of these young youth, black youth in the Twin Cities, and doing the same stuff that R.T. Ryback was doing, the same talking points when he sat on Laurie Avenue and Penn at the grand opening of the Aldi's, says, you know, his focus is North Minneapolis and the people in North Minneapolis, and nothing ever really came out of that. And it seems like Betsy Hodges slipped into the same kind of mentality with this, you know, this Cato through K and all this other stuff that she's trying to pull, and it doesn't really address the real challenge of getting their parents economically stable in the neighborhoods which they live in by providing jobs and opportunities and stimulus.
Is this the Brother's Keeper program of President Barack Obama? Is that what we're talking about?
Yeah.
What's that now,
about the
14th program in the last 15 years to address the problem of youth in our city, and then at some point in time we talk about the parents, the adults, and et cetera. This is the program you're talking about, Don?
Yeah, exactly. That's the same program, Brother's Keeper.
Yeah.
Yeah, which is, you know, it's a political, you know, left wing kind of, yeah, just a dog and pony show, basically. And
okay, kind of get the youngsters' minds right so when they become eligible to vote, if they don't have a felony before that, that they just kind of keep the Democrats in power? Is that kind of
exactly
what this is about?
Exactly.
Orientation in that direction. Okay, man, I understand. You know, I understand what it's all about. I had a friend of mine on the West Coast in a conversation today talk in terms of what we're about here in the United States is really regime change. We just change regimes anytime that we want and make it appear that it's going to be a better life for the least of our quote-unquote Americans, if you will. That's why the meeting yesterday over at the – actually, it was held in the Judiciary Building with the Commissioner of MnDOT, that's Minnesota Department of Transportation. It's just amazing to hear representatives from the Minneapolis and St. Paul NAACPs. You know, Mel Reeves speaking for both the Minneapolis NAACP and our Minnesota Hire. You know what I mean? Folks wearing so many hats, can't quite keep them on their pointed heads. But let me ask this question.
Okay.
Man, those phone lines are open.
Yes, they are.
What is the announcement on how many jobs are they going to have for black youngsters starting right now? Actually, should have been starting in late April. So what do we set aside? 1,000? 1,500? 800?
It's funny that you bring that up, Mr. Edwards, because usually right now in the month of May, right before June, there's some huge article or something somewhere in one of these local African black papers that say that the step-up program or some kind of program they got going over north and south or in the Twin Cities is going to hire 1,000, 1,500 youth, and I haven't seen it yet. But it's a regular, it's a routine to have this piece of information out, and it's just like it's just neatly tucked away. And I'm wondering,
is this kind of like rite of passage kind of thing? I mean,
yes,
it's kind of like a rite of passage. It always happens, but it doesn't. I'm wanting to know because I'm looking at the large number of African American youth, both sides of the city. I was listening to some, internal discussion here just over the last number of days, and some of the philosophy that is being generated in preparation for, the enforcement of law and public safety was that you're at a place now, if you see seven young black men standing on a corner, you can believe that seven of them are unemployed and at least six of them are convicted felons and maybe all of them are on probation. I mean, I think that's terrible, but statistically, latest reports from the Department of Justice, the FBI, damn near confirms that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah, and so, I mean, I don't know what happened, economically this summer, but like you said, North Minneapolis is already off the hook as far as, these robberies and these murders, and I don't know what our leaders are to do, because I don't know if they're going to be in the street. I'm pretty sure Minneapolis NAACP is not going to be out there, monitoring the neighborhood or anything like that. But we'll just have to see at this point. And sometimes you just have to sit back and wait and watch things crumble.
I know they're going to be out there, Don. I mean, I would assume some of their organizers were there at the 4th Street Saloon the mm-hmm. other night as a young man by the name of Butts was gunned down in the street. I'm pretty sure they were out there because they had to call every squad car in the city of Minneapolis to that scene and ask the Highway Patrol and St. Paul to back them up. So I was asking, did we see organizers from the NAACP there on the streets at the 4th Street Saloon there at 4th and West Broadway? I'm quite sure they were there, Don.
Yeah, I'm receiving a message, and this person probably might call in a little bit later, but he says, my client said when she was robbed in North Minneapolis, they stole all her Dr. Seuss books, along with wallet and money. Had books for the kids. Okay? And took the books and the money and the wallet.
It's not even funny for a while.
Yeah.
This is a text message we just received. I can believe it.
Mm-hmm.
There was a robbery yesterday morning right there on Lowry. Gentleman made the mistake of coming out where he was coming from, and he was, people sometimes counting their money or whatever, they're rushing, and he walked right into to a three gunmen, and luckily they didn't shoot him or beat him, but they just ripped the money out of his hand, took a ring off his finger, and then actually kicked him in the butt blocks and told him to get the heck, the H out of here and don't look around. That was broad daylight, man. It was 11:30 in the morning. And I can understand the text message you received because there's also a lot of home invasions up in what we call the 30s. Explained that just a couple minutes ago. That's the 3,000 blocks, from 3,000, which is Lowry up to 39th, 40th, if you will. That's some dangerous area up there right now, real dangerous. And I just hope that our people take the right precaution, if you will. It's clear that there's been a war going on. And then we have a black businessman who is stabbed to death outside of his business, which actually is right down the street from HCNC. That's the Hennepin County Medical Center. So the violence is kind of out of control on the streets, but you know, we're basically being told we need to kind of keep it down. We're coming into the summer months, vacation time. You know, we're getting planning for, well, we're planning for Memorial Day this weekend. I imagine there'll be a lot of activities in the park and et cetera. I think the temperature is for pretty decent weather. Is that correct?
Yeah.
On Monday, you know. So just kind of hoping for the best, kind of hope that people don't do a lot of drinking and et cetera. By the way, the 4th Street Saloon the other night, overcrowded in violation of the fire marshal. By the way, they've had, five homicides in the last 4 to 5 years at the 4th Street Saloon, and there's never been any move to suspend their license.
Mm. Yeah, let that happen in downtown Minneapolis. They'll shut the place down, you know.
Well, absolutely, absolutely. But for some reason or another, they like to see that activity. Oh, by the way, when the Mr. Butts was shot and killed, there was police officers right there in the parking lot. But he was shot up the street a little ways, about like a half a block. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
You actually, the police actually could hear the gunman call out the brother's name before they opened fire on him.
Oh, no.
I mean, you'd think that they'd be able to get out of the parking lot and see the gunman, right?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you would think so, right? I mean,
yeah, maybe, I would hope that, yeah. Shoot.
Yeah, I mean, well, just kind of incorrect. So we got that going, and school's getting ready to come out. Bless you there, Mr. Allen.
Oh, thank you.
By the way, some more cutbacks coming at 1250 West Broadway. A lot of those expensive salaries. I think we touched on it last week.
Mm-hmm.
First nine people on the rolls 1 through 9 by salary, starting with superintendent, about $1.6 million just in salaries alone for the first nine positions.
Mm.
Yeah.
A lot of money going out the door and nothing being done, you know?
Yeah, for so little education. That's what kind of stuns me a little bit. I'm trying to figure out at what point there are some consequences for all these big salaries with so little results, particularly for the children, if you will. But again, that probably is an issue that NAACP Urban. How's the Urban League doing, by the way? Is Scott Gray still in town?
Oh no, see, you know, he's long gone, Mr. Edwards. He's nowhere to be seen anywhere. So that's kind of troubling because now we have another limp agency here in town. That you know cannot really address anything, you know, and you can't really ride off anybody's coattail just because you had someone in a major powerful position in politics a few years back, and now you're the interim leader, you know, or the president, and it's not going to work because people are tired of hearing this victimhood and these old excuses that keep resurfacing and you know recycling on why this and why that, and nothing happens. The evidence is on the table, you know, and
wow.
So I'm really interested to see what the state auditor comes up with, Mr. Edwards, regarding the Urban League.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah.
The legislature, the Republicans asked the legislative auditor, Mr. Nobles, to examine for cause the Urban League and et cetera. I mean, there was a lot of emotional responses and et cetera, but I remember we said it about, you know, it's been a month ago that we noticed that Mr. Gray, who was the acting executive, if you will, during that two-and-a-half-year period, never was at any of the meetings. In fact, the letter defending the Urban League as not being in violation of anything was actually authored by the interim president, Stephen Belton. Husband of former Mayor Sharon Sells Belton. I didn't know that Mr. Belton had a previous relationship with the Urban League over the last 20 years. But hey, what the heck? And Clinton Collins, you remember Clinton Collins, don't you, Don?
Yes, I do.
Yeah, a former kind of a columnist with Star Tribune, if you will, back about 10 years ago, and etc. Quietly came in as the president of the, or chairman of the board, really, want to get that identification tags correct, chairman of the board of the Urban League. So Legislative session has ended, Don. We said in the production meeting yesterday we were going to take a look how many bills passed that will positively affect the African American community. How many? I know that that Mr. King was looking at least 2 million. Stair Step Foundation, Dr. Alphabet Johnson, looking at a 500,000 and a set.
And we have a caller on the air.
Oh, let's get the caller in and see if in. Yeah. Line's open.
Caller, you're live on the air. Who's calling? Where are you calling from? Hello, caller, you're live on the air. Okay, I guess they just want to listen.
Just want to listen, be in the queue. Okay. So, so do we know how much, what the funding was? Oh, that's right, though. God dang, we got the problem. The governor vetoed everything.
So nothing's going on.
Yeah, particularly in the area of education, construction, and such things as that. Construction, also known as public works. Yeah, okay. Well, we hope to get some kind of indication of what kind of employment and et cetera will be available to African Americans as we move into the remainder of 2015. Maybe that isn't important. Maybe it's not important that our people be employed. Yeah, maybe, you know, it's okay to have, you know, drugs and mayhem as kind of an alternative economic base. Is that the way? Because that kind of came out in the meeting. I repeat again, the phone lines are open. The statement by the president of one of the big unions, in the presence of a number of African American leaders, when he indicated to Mr. King that here's how that got started, by the way. This white man indicated that the Negro organizations basically have a short-term mentality. Mm-hmm. And he actually kind of accused OIC of really having a short-term agenda, which wasn't going to get it. And then he went into this dissertation about one of the problems that organized labor, which he was a part of and is the president of a union, is having is that, you know, black folk just really can't excel. Just can't, he even, you know, kind of said can't read and write.
Yeah. That's unfortunate. That's that historical stereotypical mentality that, you know, they have about black folks. But, you know, some of them, you know, Ms. Harris, I hate to say this, but maybe in some cases, some of them have proven that they can't read or write, you know, and in their dealing, you know. And
wow.
I know that a couple folks, I remember, in 2009, Mr. Edwards, I was privileged enough to sit at a table with the Minnesota Department of Health where a proposal was being worked on, and I thought that I had written the heck out of the proposal, that I worked with an organization that says, okay, we want you to, you know, really lay this out with executive summaries, background, you know, recommendations. I mean, and I just did a really bang-up job. So I thought. And the document was 28 pages when I was completed, you know, which is 28 pages is enough to go into and bring into corporate America and have someone look at it and take it very seriously. Well, the organization that contracted me to write this was not awarded a penny. And so then, you know, it was my responsibility to go back into the Minnesota Department of Health and sit down with those making the decisions and talk to them about, you know, competitive information like they do in every other market. So, if, like in a radio station advertising buy, if you don't get a piece of the buy, you're eligible to call the marketing agency and say, well, can I get the competitive report? I'd like to know who got the money so I can kind of switch and tailor around my programming so maybe next time I'll be eligible. Well,
okay.
I walked in there, sat down, and they says, you know, not only will we explain to you what happened, but we will also give you a copy of the report. Mr. Edwards, it was a 2-page, on one piece of paper, both side proposal. And it was for an agency, which I'm not going to mention, I'm sore not to mention, in North Minneapolis that received probably about, I think it was between $150,000, $250,000 over a year and a half period, that We don't know to this, I don't know to this day what they did other than split the equal monthly payments over the period of the grant, because there was nothing, not one thing changed or affected by that particular contract. So I sat up there, Mr. Like the point is, you sat up there and you do the work and you do a 28-page report, and they give the money to someone with a 2-page report that you know probably will not do the work. And it was terribly written. There was typos everywhere, and you know, you can, and blue ink, Mr. Edwards, blue ink, was the type. Unprofessional, totally unprofessional. So,
wow.
I mean, I don't know how that happens, but you know, not to sympathize with this guy that says that, you know, they have some brothers and sisters that can't read and write, but that's where some of the money is going to, and that's why stuff is not getting done, so they can use that as a defense or offense. In their regulation on why they don't want to do this or that. So I'm very interested to see how far this NAACP group makes it with dealing with MnDOT. Plus, you got to have contractors sitting in that room, not race baiters and money hustlers. We'll have the same thing we've been having.
Yeah, that's really, really too bad. Well, maybe the two ranches will, you know, give some kind of update when they have their next membership meeting. By the way, is there, you know, we want to be proactive here. Is there a phone number and address we can give for the NAACP Minneapolis? Are they in their new offices and et cetera?
I'm going to look. And we have NAACP.
And is their website up and running or what?
No, I don't see anything. I don't see anything. I'm looking here. Nothing.
Well, there must be. I mean, there has to be a business number and certainly a mailing address and et cetera, right?
Yeah, I'm going to keep looking here. NAACP, Minneapolis. I'm just going to Google and see what comes up. I'll find something interesting. Minneapolis. Okay. Let's see here. Okay, first.
Well, I mean, this is come on. Now, this is a Don. You from the right must be playing some dirty tricks. I mean, this organization has been around for 100 years, if you will, as an active organization. Used to have a office there in Sabathany for many years, if you will, and even long before that, used to have a office and a piece of property on the south side, the NAACP offices. Come on, now, you must. You just aren't looking hard enough.
No, I'm digging, Mr. Edwards. I'm digging. I mean, I don't see anything about the St. Paul NAACP, and this is really interesting because of out of 312,000 results in 34 seconds, the first thing that pops up is the St. Paul NAACP, the National NAACP, Black Lives Matters, and then three of my stories regarding the May 2nd incident at North Point where you were asked to vacate the premises.
I was trespassed. Yes, I was.
You were
trespassed by armed police. Yes. Mm-hmm. Yeah. They still can't explain. I asked the county, Hennepin County, because in a statement to the Manhattan Police Department, Ms. West indicated that North Point is a private entity, and consequently, they can do whatever they want to do. Not quite sure that I remember when North Point / Pilot City was made into a private entity, but in the course of it, because Ms. West draws her check from Hennepin County and from the coffers that tax dollars go into,
yeah.
I've asked the county for the report that should have been provided to the chief administrator of Hennepin County on the trespassing, and they have told the Minneapolis Police Department they can't produce it. They don't have it. They don't know what they're talking about. So I just want to kind of update on that, if you will, because I'm really looking for that document, if you will, as we prepare for litigation.
Yes.
Yeah. That report should have been immediately sent to the chief administrator, first to the director of health services, the chief administrator of Hennepin County, and just visited there day before yesterday, and no such documentation, and I'm aware that the Minneapolis Police Department has.
No, I'm just listening.
For copies. Don, you had. In fact, I think I actually recognize that voice. But anyways, we're asking for the necessary documentation required by law, and we read the statute on the air two Wednesdays ago. And you know, it's not gonna go away. So anyways, again, those phone lines are open. You know, we're talking about a number of things here. Unfortunately, we've had a black police officer, Michael Griffin, 8-year veteran department, indicted on 9 counts, you know, in and by himself, if you will, for issues ranging from brutality to falsifying reports, and, of course, probably one of the most serious, and that is perjury, if you will. So Mr. Allen and myself were saying that we expect both the Police Federation and organizations such as the NAACP to raise the necessary inquiry and give the necessary support, you know what I mean? Because in this country, you know, you are innocent until proven guilty, right?
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. As they say,
I mean, because,
you know.
Let's think about it. Justice matters, right?
Yeah, black lives matter.
That's right. Well,
know,
justice. We want to see that. We're coming down in the last 15 minutes. Again, we're watching closely the situation in Waco, Texas. I'm telling you, Don, 170. We haven't seen those kind of numbers since the days of the civil rights movement in the 1960s. Yeah, 170 gangsters, thugs, and et cetera.
These are bikers.
I'm sorry. I was thinking about the black guys. Fraudulent slip. These are just bikers on a friendly ride, if you will. And as we repeat again, on Sunday we'll be showing some pictures of our some of our bikers and in law enforcement and their friends and et cetera, partying together and coming together and wearing their. Have you ever seen a biker's jacket from some of these groups?
Yeah, I
with all the paraphernalia, the Confederate flag, the Nazi swastika, the Iron Cross that is, you know, the counter to the Congressional Medal of Honor. That, have you ever seen one of those jackets, Don?
Yes, I have, in the city.
Sure. Well, you know, you have to get your Harley.
Or not.
By the way, I'm getting a text message here from my friends and associates out there in the Aryan Nation in Idaho. They're saying, you guys need to kiss our behinds kind of thing. Hey, they're pumped up. And a couple of funerals tomorrow, too, by the way, for the bikers down there around the Waco area. So the authorities are still saying that they are not quite sure that this thing is ended, if you will, you know. But, again, 9 people killed, 18 injured, wounded, et cetera, 170 people in jail. Do you understand, Don, the imposing of $1 million bail on each and every one of them?
Yeah, that's a lot of money. That means that a lot of people.
I don't know
are
the last
jail.
Time I've seen that.
I really
don't know the last time that is something that we've seen in the American jurisprudence system. 170. I mean, that's the kind of stuff. Of course, it would be about a third of those numbers. That's the thing, stuff they used to do to the Costa Nostra and the. And the mobs and the mafia and et cetera. Yeah, man, 170 people, $1 million bail apiece. How many of those bails do you think will be reduced very quietly over the next 3 to 4 weeks?
Oh, quite a few of them. They're gonna someone has something on someone. Yeah, it's gonna be totally different here shortly, and we're not gonna find out till after the fact, of course, as usual. But I guarantee you that. This isn't over. I talked to someone who, excuse me, I got a little frog in my throat. I talked to someone that is from Waco, Texas, who is now an educator here in St. Paul, in Twin Cities, and she said that it was very funny because one of her friends worked for a local television station down there, and they drew the lines very clear, and he was an anchor. And the guy on the floor would count down, you know, 10, 9, 8, 7, 6, 5, 4, 3, and just before he would say 2 or 1, he'd say 3, then he'd say 2, Jew boy, 1, and point at him. And that was kind of the nature.
Wow, in Waco, down there in good old Waco?
Yeah, down there in Waco, and that was kind of the nature of the beast of that whole neighborhood where the lines are drawn very carefully and seriously. And if you cross those lines, I mean, from politicians to law enforcement to, you know, whoever, it's not taken lightly at all. You know, and, you know, you had a bunch of feds down there a while back at the Waco, Texas, where all those folks got American citizens were killed and murdered and burnt out.
It's an ugly place. I mean, that whole confrontation down there, man, the United States government never could fully explain how they went in there and killed so many of those children and women. David Koresh, boy, that was a name that lived in infamy there for a while. I don't think people try not to talk about him anymore. Kind of like Bin Laden, if you will. By the way, the Bin Laden papers, some released today. Most of them have been declassified, if you will, or enough information has been redacted. But anyways, it comes at a time when some people are maintaining that the government did tell the truth about what really happened over there in Pakistan on that occasion that American Special Forces went in and executed Bin Laden and then buried his body at sea. Remember that? I put him on a cruiser and took him out in the middle of the Indian Ocean and dumped him in the middle of the ocean. I never could understand what the, you know, probative value of that was all about. They said, well, they didn't want anybody ever to be able to find him and memorialize or place in martyrdom his body, if you will. Of course, also, it means you really don't have a way to find out if that was really Bin Laden. I mean,
true.
You know, what the heck, you know, can we say, if you will. Say, the Iraqi army, this is kind of our international piece. We know there's probably not a lot of folks that will call, but we know we have a lot of international listeners. The Iraqis ran again. Do you know who the greatest supplier of military hardware for ISIL is? Really?
The CIA, America.
The United States of America, yeah.
Yeah.
We give the equipment to the Iraqis, and then they pretend to go into battle, and they transfer all of that American hardware that the American taxpayers have paid billions of dollars for, and they then transfer that to the to ISIL. Yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah. We are the most significant supplier of weapons to ISIL. You know, they've got everything. They've got American armored vehicles, tanks, American rockets, propelled grenades and et cetera. You know, we don't like to talk about that, but I'll tell you who's making money. The military industrial complex.
Oh, yeah. Billions.
America's
billion
armament industry making money so much because what we can do now, we just can anticipate an order, if you will, for American weapons from ISIL, and then we just tell our Iraqi. I mean, can you realize that they've been training the Iraqi forces for 10 years? According to what they say.
Yeah.
And that's, you know, the best that they are, quote unquote, able to do. But it's not the cowardliness or et cetera. This is a well manicured plan, if you will, of making money.
Yeah.
Making money.
That's
what at some
the
point,
right
probably
now.
The Defense Department will give us a breakdown of how much American taxpayer property, military property and military supplies and et cetera have just been left on the battlefield and turned over to ISIL. You know, God help us if they ever get their hands on a nuclear device.
So Mr. Edwards, you talk about making money. What is the black community, not just here, but across the United States, going to figure out that's what the game is? And how long are we, I mean, you know, you go far back and further back in history than I do, but, it seems like we keep repeating the cycle of, you know, capitalism is bad, making money is bad, and we can never get in the right rooms at the right time. And when you get four or five of us together, if your ice cubes are colder than mine and we own restaurants, we're throwing salt in the game, you know, against one another. We can't combine. It's like I had this conversation with one of my Jewish friends who said that, well, my father groomed us. This is what he's telling me. My father groomed us to take over the business, and our cousins over here might have the same kind of business. But, you know, we share in ideas, and we have partnerships, and we make sure that, you know, the wealth is spread around in the family. And, you know,
well,
I'm looking
– But, Don, there was a time – see, I have to correct you from the right there, because our friend M, who has not joined us tonight, but I'm pretty sure he's listening. See, M, who clearly has a real deep understanding in history of how Minneapolis and St. Paul have operated, he has said to us a number of times of a Minneapolis that he remembers, and I believe that he is consistent with the millennium. He and I are basically from the same millennium, if you know what I'm saying. Mm-hmm. When we had that, and we did have African American families that, for let's say a 50-year period, were turning over their businesses and their wealth to their heirs and et cetera. But a combination of urban renewal, the devastation in 1950 and 51 of the commercial areas of prosperity on 6th Avenue North, now referred to as Highway 55 or Olson Highway, when those businesses were taken down by the federal government as part of urban renewal, because at one point we had six commercial blocks on each side of Olson Highway. But what happened when these businesses were lost, African-American or Negroes, as businesses, were told that there would be relocation. In fact, that was put in the hands of the Minneapolis Housing Authority of that particular time. Mm. It never happened. They were not allowed to relocate. There would be a problem with the relocation funds. There would be a problem with finding a suitable site business. I remember a situation where we had had two African-American cab companies in the African-American community for, we're now talking about 1951, 52, that for over 40 years we had two Negro cab companies. And in 1951, with their garage and businesses being taken by urban renewal, they thought that they had an arrangement in which they would have a new location. The city, federal government, reneged on that. They did not have a place to kind of like the NAACP, you know, didn't have a place to receive phone calls for business purposes. In other words, people calling for rides, because at that particular time, 1950, 1951, white cabs in Minneapolis would not pick up Negroes. And they definitely would not come to certain redlined areas, both in North Minneapolis, part of South Minneapolis, and the Seven Corners area. And so we were a very proud people back in, let's say, 1920, 21, all the way up to, for 30 years, if you will, up to 1951. I mean, two cab companies. People can laugh at that, if you will. You have to understand we had a black population in Minneapolis of about 2,800, St. Paul about 2,300, probably about initially about 1,600 in 1,500 in Duluth. We still even had a couple hundred black people in Fergus Falls. And so it was important to be able to have that, if you will. If you needed a cab late at night and et cetera, you could call one of the two African-American or Negro cab companies, you know. In fact, it deals with, and I had promised some people, Mr. Allen, and said it to you, I want to commend the Star Tribune for its Minnesota history piece on one of the great artists, if you will, and entertainers in the black experience and definitely from Minnesota, Ms. Sims. Beautiful piece on a very beautiful African-American woman, very, very, very gifted. Grew up right in North Minneapolis, Mr. Allen, right there at 62 Royalston Avenue, which technically, if you were to go back 50 years, her house would be, the backyard of her house would be right where Caring and Sharing is at, 62 Royalston. Hilda Sims, Hilda Mosley Sims, if you will, just one of the greatest ever. And yet, damn, Don, we don't have a Black History Museum. No one can explain what happened to the $3 million. Oops. And so there we are again. White newspaper, white reporter gives us some minimal background on a great Black American. Sad, man. It's really sad. You know. We're pushed so far to the bottom of the barrel, it's disgusting. But you can't give up the fight, right?
No, we can't give up the fight. You got to keep rolling ahead.
That's right. So, anyways, like we said, those phone lines were open. Want to repeat again so people know. Ask your local NAACP what their plan is after their big meeting with the commissioner of the Department of Transportation yesterday at the Judiciary Building in St. Paul, talking in terms that they will handle whatever needs to be handled for the employment of the African American. kind of get ready. You know, so I hope that President Martin over there in St. Paul, President Kimmy Pounds over here can kind of give us an indication of how many jobs we will have this year or this summer as we move into the remainder of 2015.
Mm. Yeah, that'd be very interesting.
yeah, because I'm hearing a lot of numbers being thrown around, and I know a lot of our young men are asking the question, you know, where are the jobs? You know, no one can quite make them understand where the jobs are. I know I can't answer that question. We don't head up any organizations, and we have not been the beneficiaries of the millions and millions of dollars that have come into our community. But this is a crucial question that we hope that we will be able to answer over the next number of weeks. By the way, what, school will be out in, what, 3 weeks? 2 weeks?
Public schools should be out in a couple of weeks, and I know universities are, I think, this last couple of weeks, it just matters on where you're at, what school you go to, so.
Okay.
But, yeah.
Well, you know, yeah, because, man, I'm just concerned about our young people. I'm just really concerned in basically the last minute and a half that we have, because I'm just detecting, at the top of this program, Mr. Allen and I discussed the rate of armed robberies and et cetera that are taking place, particularly in North Minneapolis, but there are also a lot of robberies and things going out and going on in the area around the Stewart neighborhood and off of Franklin and et cetera. And it's kind of frightening, man. It's really frightening. And gunmen are walking up to you now right on the streets. And whatever you do, I know it's hard to take, but if cats ask you for your money, just go ahead and give it up, man, because you can always try to recover some income. You can't recover your life.
Mm-mm. You sure can.
These boys are shooting first, taking your money, and walking on away. So, anyways, Mr. Allen, looks like we're pretty much time for old James Brown to take us home, man. And let's do this, Mr. Allen. Let's offer a prayer for the salvation of the African-American community in Minnesota.
Yes. Ooh. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Here we go.
All right.